Hey everyone, welcome to the second call in the winter sessions. Anna Walsh and Brent here with Mark, Q&A for the people.
Q&A. Wow, deep.
That's right.
We're coming to the people.
Saturday,
okay.
Saturday, beautiful Saturday, I hope, for everybody. Beautiful over here.
It's not really. We're getting our little second round of winter, so.
Aw.
Goes. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Dana. Hi, Brent.
Hey.
Thanks, guys, for taking
Hello
a Saturday.
Everyone. Hello to everyone out there.
Out there. It's kind of funny, like, coming at you. Okay, people, like, let's just come with this intensity of the coronavirus, right? Oh, I just love the moments where I totally forget about it, you know? You know, when you just, like, I just sitting here thinking about how you can just go so deeply into fear, and it's all that exists, and then you completely forget that there's this threat, or you don't watch the news or whatever, and you're just perfectly fine. It just tells you a lot. It tells you a lot about the chemistry that fear produces in your body. And so I want to talk about that today. Very much want to talk about fear and how we can negotiate with fear. I haven't really met anybody that has been able to completely transcend it. There are a few masters maybe, but it's just something we need to acknowledge, negotiate with, and move on. So let's look at that today. Let's look at the viral universe. We'll go over that because this week we talked about the viruses in Mark's call. Next week we have Anthony William. We'll go even deeper into the Epstein-Barr virus next week. But in general, we're talking about how the viruses behave and why we get them. I think it's a really important distinction between, like, why they're attacking us, but why do we get them? What's the breakdown? So we're going to talk about immunity and how our systems break down and why. So important. And this is what we talk about in every session, right? Well, where's the breakdown and how do we rebuild? So, and fear being a huge part of that, right? Can you guys hear me okay? Sorry, I'm just having to move my location. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
great. Yep.
Okay, good. I'm actually still at my friend's house, still staying on his couch. So that's been okay, less than optimal, but just making it work, right? We do what we can. So we got a lot of ground to cover, and we are going to take your written in questions at the end. And then if we have time, we will open the lines for questions or comments. How much time do you two have?
I've got an hour and a half, but it's a, you know,
okay.
You tell me what you need.
I think hour and a half is probably our max. Brent, do you have that much time?
Yep, that works.
Okay, you can do it. Excellent. Okay, so can I tell you one thing I love about the coronavirus? Totally ridiculous. I've just been chuckling to myself. It's like people, everyday people, are acting like Lyme patients. They are highly aware. They're washing their hands. They're highly aware of environments. They're eating well. They're working on getting enough rest. You know, they're more concerned about EMFs. Sorry about that. Focusing on sleep, focusing on family time, cleaning up the air quality in their homes. You see, this is a beautiful benefit to this, if anything, right? I think it's actually, I read somewhere that Taiwan, the level of health in Taiwan has totally increased because of all these measures. So it's not, if we could do this and be without fear, we're going in the right direction. Right? But I was just thinking about that, like, okay, now you all know where we are, okay? We've been talking about this for a long time. Anyway, it's funny. So let's talk about, can we talk about the immune system a little bit here? And this sort of dovetails from our last call about environmental toxins. And really what this looks like is our poor little bodies are just saturated, right? We're in this state of overwhelm in this modern world. And, you know, with overwhelm of toxins and overwhelm of what I call wrong information from the EMFs, from the media. It's an energetic field. Those things create a field. The media creates a field. EMFs actually create a field of energy that surrounds us and puts us kind of in that reality. So we'll talk more about that and how that's really disrupting our connection to the universe and our connection to health. So what breaks down immunity? We know toxins, obviously. We're so saturated at this point. Chemicals, heavy metals, stress, daily stress, EMFs, we've talked about a lot. We know that being exposed to a high level of EMR, I like to call it EMR, electromagnetic radiation from wireless products, makes the pathogens more aggressive. So whatever, even if you have a low-level candida, for example, when you get around the EMR, it's going to explode. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Mark? Because I know that I think that's a really important distinction here.
Well, anything that weakens your immune system, and EMRs are really good at that, allows anything that's living in the body to take off. And so I think EMRs are a really good place to focus because people just ignore it. Many people, not Lyme people, tend to ignore these things. And so, you know, it doesn't matter what people ignore. The pathogens in your body are paying attention to every little weakness that you do. All the Lyme people that we're talking to are cutting out every weakness they can. They cut the chemical exposure out. They eat good food. They make sure to poop and pee. They make sure and move. They do all the things that would be good for anyone, for any kind of viral or any pathogenic load. So that's why the general public is shocked, because they're having to actually limit some behaviors. And what's shocking to me, Dana? Everybody's telling me how there's no food. Now, here's the weird part. I only shop around the outside of the health food store, so I never look at pasta, I never look at rice, I never look at the dried goods, the canned things, and so there's plenty of produce. All the stuff that the Lyme people are already doing, the fresh, locally grown, organic and seasoned, even if you can't afford organic, fresh is better. That stuff's available. That's the stuff that will keep you alive and healthy. So everybody that's worried is buying stuff that's dead, has no nutritional value, just will fill their belly, and that's it. And so I look at EMFs, eating bad food, not moving, not pooping and peeing. You know, that's the things that screw people up. So, yes, EMFs are a big part of that, but every Lyme patient knows about all these things.
That's right.
Anything else you want me to focus on in regards to, I mean, you know, Klinghardt has talked a lot about how pathogens upright grow much faster when they're exposed to EMFs. I mean, he's got a very good explanation of that. And many other people do too. So I'm not worried that people don't know this. It's more just all the people listening to this call are probably way ahead of the curve from the rest of the entire country. Dana, can you hear me?
I wonder if she's still on the call, but I don't hear her
She fell off. So since until I hear her voice, I'm going to add some other pieces. So in terms of coronavirus, I have a lot of people I have a lot of patients, some of whom I haven't seen, who are contacting me and worrying about it. And I'm telling them, if you go on an immune support protocol, since they're current patients and they obviously know what I think about it, and I give them the specific things, if you go on an immune support protocol, you'll be fine. And so people are doing the basic stuff that they need to do. And I've got a lot of things that I recommend for people based on, and I have seriously ill people. I have people in stage 4 cancer. So, and then I have a lot of people that have Lyme, and I have a lot of people that have other things. So I'm not talking about
high-level athletes. I do have some. But I have a lot of very ill people that are already on immune protocols, and they're very strong. And they're the ones that don't get the colds and the flus and don't go down because they're cautious about all the appropriate things that they should be cautious about. And I never have to do more than just remind them, take a little bit more of this when you're traveling, when you're doing something where your exposure is up, increase your immune support, which is not hard to do. Anyone can do that. Now, the other piece that I see on the TV, and I look it up, and anyone can look this up. The regular cold and flu, the one that everybody lives with all the time, typically kills 61,000 people. It did last year, and over 45 million people had it. So on a program I saw last night, somebody said, if at the bottom of the screen, every time another person got the flu, or every time someone died, they had that scrolling across through there, then everybody would be terrified every minute. My experience is if I get all the people that are listening to this call and the people that I work with to relax about this, I'm not saying be stupid. By relax, I do not mean ignore basic protocols of hygiene and taking care of yourself. I'm saying relax and know that your basic protocols are going to keep you well. And then you stay out of fight or flight, and then your adrenals don't fire off, and then your kidneys don't have a problem. So there's a lot of ways you can take care of yourself really simply with doing the behaviors you're already doing. And you will be much
healthier. Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are.
Welcome.
Hi, that was strange. Sorry, I got disconnected.
Can you hear Mark saying?
I think it's some of the stuff we've discussed about how Lyme patients are already doing the behaviors. Is that what you're saying?
I was emphasizing what low awareness will do, right?
Yeah. They're probably not only not going to get sick, but they're the ones that don't tend to get the colds and the flus that are coming through that affect a lot more people than the coronavirus will.
Well, you hear on the news, and we know that there's this word immunocompromised. So it's interesting because in some ways, we would be in that category. But as you said, we have the behaviors because we already got the memo, right, of how to live a clean life and a healthy life. So it doesn't mean we're without symptoms. And I heard you say, Mark, that you have cancer patients that are on like a high-level immune protocol and they don't get the normal colds and flus. Is that something you said?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
And, one thing that across the board, all Lyme patients, Lyme, mold, whatever our cocktail is, we all know that detox is essential. And we know in this community that toxins are what is a breeding ground. It's the terrain, right? It's the terrain. It's the breeding ground for bacteria, virus, mold, parasites. We know how important it is to detox. Now, in these programs, we talk about building and cleansing. So let's go over that a little bit, Mark, because I think at this point, we're going to get overzealous one way or the other. So I think it's really important in this moment to build strength. And that means strength on every single level. That means eating good food, getting a robust immune system and mental outlook. I think that's really, really key. And then detoxing in a way that doesn't overtax the body. Right. So what I want to get at here is we get over. I do it too. Like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to go out and I'm going to just like take a bunch of silver and I'm going to do oregano and I'm going to do all this stuff. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I can't move. My lymph is full. Right. We want to get into the killing because we're afraid. So let's talk about that balance between building immunity, a slow kill or elimination. Let's not use that word. Let's say keeping the pathogens back with appropriate supplements, and then the detox on a daily level.
Well, the easy way to think about this is anything that's dying off in your body, whether you're starving it to death by not eating the things that allow the pathogens to grow, which is smart, eating more alkaline diet, having high fruits and vegetables, all fresh. I do not mean fruit juice. I do not mean dried fruit. So if you're eating the things that slow down the ability for the pathogens to grow, functionally you're killing them by not giving them a room, not giving them any oxygen for them to grow. So that's an easy way to do it, because you're slowing down the death rate of those things. And every time a pathogen and the tissue around it, you know, is dying, you're going to have waste that has to be sloughed off through the lymph system. You're going to have to poop and pee it out. You're going to have to sweat it out. And since Lyme patients usually are tired and they can't work up a sweat because they maybe can't exercise as much, they focus on pooping and peeing. Well, the reality is, if you increase the kill rate, then you have to excrete faster, or as you said, you'll hurt all over. You're not going to feel good. And since Lyme patients, by definition, have the detox pathways slowed down, we don't want to overload a detox pathway. I never want to overload one. And that's why people get, quote-unquote, a Herxheimer or a cleansing or a healing reaction. And I always say you want that ratio of how much you can excrete, pee, shit, sweat, how much you can excrete,
oh,
how much you can kill. So if you kill at a faster rate than you can get it out, everyone knows the symptoms. So if you're using any of the things, grapefruit seed extract, you know, any of the antivirals, you better support the drainage pathways. And if you don't, you will feel bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I guess the way you titrate, you try a little bit. If you're here's what I want to say. It's really important for us to bolster immunity, stay temperature balanced, okay? That's a really huge piece, being cold. We need to talk about that today, about being cold and the kidneys and the adrenals and how that weakens the system so much, you know, catching a cold. But I also think it's really smart to have all the powerful antibiotics around, like silver. You know, I'm taking the different mushrooms. Go ahead, Mark.
Oregano, grapefruit seed extract, you know, monolaurin. There's many things that work. You just have to find out what will work for your body.
Well,
because what you're saying is some people have a stronger reaction to one of the killers than others. So not all killers work for all people. And there's many presumptions in there. We don't know what your lungs are like, what your digestive tract's like, your urinary tract's like. So I can't give somebody a universal killer because it may overload an old system. If you've had a history of bladder infections or UTIs, we want to be careful. If you had some GI issues, we want to be careful. If you had colds and flus and lots of lung issues. So the goal is to support the systems in your body that have typically had a problem and not overload those systems.
So let's talk a little bit more about what that means. Okay, so if you take, you know, a lot of silver, you take even, some everyday sort of natural antibiotic, and you take too much of it, and kidney is a perfect example. Kidney bladder is weak. And you overload that organ with the die-off, right? So we also know that pathogens hold a ton of heavy metals. So there we killed off all this candida, and we killed off viruses, and they're holding heavy metals, and then bam, all the heavy metals go into the system. Yes, we need binders, but sometimes even the binders can't contain all that. So what you're talking about there is some of these systems and organs, the tissue is not actually strong enough to support the excretion of the toxin. So we want to remodel the organ and the tissue and get it strong and functioning before we start doing a big kill. Is that
correct?
Fair to say it that way?
That was perfectly accurate.
So I guess that's where we go back to the nourishing, really, really nourishing. And what that looks like, at the end of the day, it looks like high mineral foods. And you can all day have the high mineral foods. You know, people like to go on paleo diets because the grains tend to bind, phytic acid binds to minerals. You know, there's a lot of that. But high mineral foods, we really want to remineralize our bodies. Why? Because when your body is remineralized, you're alkaline, right? So when you're alkaline, you bugs can't grow. But it's not that simple. You can't just eat a bunch of meat and bone broth and all this stuff and think that you're fine. It's about what you absorb. And that brings us all the way back to one key element that is so missing is the stomach acid, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get
it's your protective barrier against most pathogens, and it works.
Well, it's your protective barrier. That's number one in the gut.
Yeah.
Number one in your gut, and then it's also what's required to absorb protein. That's one, but also to absorb minerals. And so
mm-hmm.
many of us are low in stomach acid, and you know, diets like the GAPS diet, I think, is really interesting, where they just basically use bone broth for a period until the gut lining is healed. And it doesn't always work for people, especially if they're vegan. But I do love that Anthony William is doing a similar thing with celery juice. Now,
mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned it in the last call, and I'll probably talk maybe again about it because he's coming up in the next week. There's something really profound about the celery juice. It's that bioavailable sodium. And I think it's so essential to building hydrochloric acid. And also,
mm-hmm.
as I said before, it is like a magic trick because it is a laxative. I mean, it is so funny, Mark. And Brent, have you seen this? There's like people making songs about the actual diarrhea that comes after celery juice. And
I've never seen the songs, but I know that it works for people.
Oh my gosh. Like more than a few people have made their videos about, it's just, it's like doing vitamin C to bowel tolerance. It is a very incredible cleanse. And I'm someone that tends more towards constipation, and it works. So, I mean, I would encourage people to try it. I was very concerned that I would be too cold to try it. Raw juices in the winter, not always what I'm attracted to. But I did about 8 ounces. They talk about 16 ounces is ideal, but I did 8 ounces with no problem. And what made me feel cold was the celery was actually cold from the refrigerator. So if you can figure out how to just wait a minute so it's not that cold. But anyway, it didn't cool down my body. So I want to share that. Building your stomach acid is so important. And if you're someone that has very low stomach acid, eating a lot of meat is not going to work. You know, small amounts, maybe. I would start with bone broth and really work up to more dense proteins. Would you agree with that, if that's something you need to do?
I would agree completely. And remember the rule of thumb. I just use rules because it's a way of thinking. It's not true for every person. But anyone over the age of 40 and anyone with any chronic health conditions has hypochlorhydria. So they have an underproduction of stomach acid. So by the time you get to be 50 or 60, your stomach acid production is almost non-existent for a lot of people. And if you're trying to eat heavy proteins and you're not producing enough HCL, then there's many ways to do it, obviously. You can, you know, you've talked and I've talked about apple cider vinegar and water. Makes a huge difference. It's similar to, not the same as, the pH of what your HCL should be. There's supplements you can take. And the main thing is, this is why all your programs work, teaching people the basics. I mean, Dr. Jensen always said, there's no teeth in the stomach, meaning masticate, chew your food until it's liquid. That way you do produce some digestive enzymes. You do break it down better. But when people eat like a dog, where they chew the meat 2 times and swallow, they got a big lump of something in their stomach, and they feel like it sits there forever. So, yes, hydrochloric acid is vital, and the best way to produce it is by thorough chewing of your food. I know that sometimes is tiring, but it's very easy to do. It doesn't require any extra money. You don't have to see anyone. You don't have to go and pay me. You basically have learned how to take care of yourself. A little apple cider vinegar with your water, chew your food thoroughly, and you will do much better than anyone else.
Well, it's true. For so many reasons, chewing is it just makes a world of difference because you slow down. Right. Puts you more in that parasympathetic, puts you in the moment. You know, I think it's a huge problem in our world and society, just especially in the States. We just gobble our food and it's disgusting. You know, people with the fast food in the car, get it, shove it in, driving, you know, it's not how we were meant to eat. I'm going to go back a little bit to bone broth, and I apologize if people are vegan. Listen, last year I was vegan. It fluctuates for me. And I really like to practice sort of seasonal eating because I find that, let's say winter, I'm way more attracted to broths. I will eat bone broth in the winter. I will start in the fall and into the winter, and by spring I'm letting it go. I'm way more interested in greens, raw greens, and liver cleansing. And then by summer, it's about raw food and fruits, and I'm basically vegan. So it's just following that cycle, so you're not married to, like, in the summer I have to eat bone broth, you know, it's just, if you don't feel like it. And to me, it's such a great way to not create more allergies. And I know bone broth has huge benefits. I mean, absolutely huge benefits. And it's like, do we know that the bones are completely clean? Is there heavy metal? You know, so you don't get saturated with one food. Is that making sense to you guys? So,
yeah,
bone broth, it just, there's so many interesting things about it. The glycine and the proline, the amino acids are very liver cleansing. And they're also help to seal up the gut so you can absorb your food better. Bone broth, people don't always talk about this, is also hydrophilic, so it holds water, so it helps to hydrate you. If you notice when you drink bone broth, your skin gets better. That's partly the collagen, but it's also hydrophilic. It keeps you hydrated. So I in this program, there's a healing chicken soup, and it's an hour long. It's not a long cook bone broth because when you do the long cook bone broth, there tends to be some glutamate that's released and people can be really sensitive to that. So I want you to just rest assured that this soup that we have in this session is very nourishing, very simple, and my gosh, really strengthening. And I want to talk about, you know, the age old, like, eat chicken soup when you have a cold. Let's talk about why. Because when the body gets cold, what loves cold? What loves to grow? Viruses,
yep.
Bacteria. You know, it's like, why does hyperthermia work? Because why do fevers work? Because heat kills off pathogens. So when a body is cold, Mark, you talk about this a lot and how you've seen most, it's a higher percentage than not, but most chronically ill people tend to run cold.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that a little bit.
I think what you're getting at, which is really important, is anything that takes down the energy in a human being, the ATP, the cellular energy, the mitochondria is not working well. One of the things that's the most damaging, obviously loss of oxygen, you don't have very long, but nobody's going to have that. So what we're talking about is the most damaging thing is cold because it pervades your body. In Chinese medicine, it's going to weaken your kidneys. You know, in regular medicine, you're going to end up going into fight or flight. As soon as we're cold, anyone's cold, you know, our body switches and goes into fight or flight, and now the adrenals are pumping out trying to get we're trying to push blood to the periphery. We're trying to make the hands and feet no longer freezing or the whole body. And Dana, at times you've told me you've been so cold, your teeth are chattering and you can't warm up. And that's why I try to make sure that people, yes, I want them hydrated. That's really important. And hydrated and warm. So the bone broth becomes a perfect thing because it's going to add yang energy. It's going to make you warm. It's going to support your kidneys and your adrenals. And your immune system will turn back on. So as soon as people are walking around cold all the time, the body is in a defense mode, and it says, I don't have enough energy to keep you warm and keep the immune system firing at the level it needs to. So I think keeping body temperature stable, keeping homeostasis, the ability to regulate your temperature, is one of the most important things, and it doesn't cost a lot of money, but I'm going to emphasize something for the people listening. Do it from the inside, not the outside. What does that mean? If you're relying on electric blankets and clothes and hot showers and hot baths, you're pulling your heat out to the surface. Do it. That's why your programs work. Do it with your food. So this time of year, stressful to the kidneys, the weather is cold, you're going to go into fight or flight. All the people that have chronic illness tend to run cold. Now they have to listen to you about the way to cook and the way to eat, and you can tell them in just a second what it was like for you when you ate the right kind of food, the chicken soup. What happened?
Oh, well, I mean, the one that I make, it's, let's put it this way. I get as cold as like a corpse, and it is crazy because I struggle with thyroid issues, right? Especially thyroid issues major under the EMR that I've been living under. But to your point, Mark, I was so cold in the house that I'm staying because I don't have control over it that I had to go in my parka, in wool, in a hat, in a sweater, and boots into the car in the sun with the heat on. And I live in California. I mean, it was like, wow, this is getting scary. And some people actually, when they get, quote, sick or a fever, their temperature drops. So it's a strange thing. But yeah, so the things that you've taught me that you brought into my life really like pushed into my life because I've known about it, but it was miso. And so I've been making these beautiful, and I will share with it in Facebook, miso with ginger and mushrooms, medicinal mushrooms, ginger, garlic, and I've been craving like crazy sesame oil. So those things are very nourishing, warming. And then the chicken soup is just like in minutes you will warm up and sort of ground into your body. Now this is, we're talking a lot about a person that is yin. And hopefully you guys watch some of these videos where we talk about being too yin. That means you're cold, you're airy, you're not grounded. And especially when you're under all the EMR, you're not grounded. So, you know, yang food, salty, warm, a lot of animal products, but they're, you know, sweet potatoes, very grounding. Right, Mark? I love dates so much. I eat dates and sunflower butter every morning. By the way, sunflower butter, very high in selenium. Selenium is what people are talking about as a preventative for coronavirus. Selenium, get your selenium up there. So yeah, staying warm, I like what you're saying, from the inside and not getting too cold. Now, if you're someone that runs hot, let me back up. I want to talk about kidneys and being cold and fear. So why do those things, so in Chinese medicine, kidneys hold fear. So why would that be? Can we talk about that connection?
Well,
because let's put it this way. When you're cold, life is scary. You're in fight or flight.
Yeah, your life. We know, what do people do when the yin meridians are on the front? If somebody's out in nature and they have nothing other than their clothes on their back, they curl up into a ball, right? They try and protect the yin meridian, and because the cold will take you down, and so we know the cold immediately puts people in fight or flight, immediately shuts down immune system, not completely, but it takes it way down, and when your body gets that kind of signal, you secrete these hormones that are saying, this is dangerous. And what you get with that, since it weakens the kidneys, is you get a high amount of fear. Because your body's trying to tell you in a nice way, get warm. That's what your body's saying. That's your body's method to you is, I'm going to make you afraid of this situation because they did that movie, Into Thin Air, and there was it was about these people that were hiking on Everest. And they were talking on a sat phone or a thing where they could see it. And the woman is talking to her husband, and he's lying in the snow. And he literally doesn't know he's not moving. And she's telling him to get up and keep moving, and he thinks he's moving. So what happens is your body tells you in the early stages when you're cold, do something. When you get too cold, things don't work. So cold to me, the fear is a good thing. Respect it. Listen to it, and then take effective behavior, effective action. So I'm not saying you should live in fear. I'm saying it's an indicator
to do something effective for your body.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, body temperature is so so major. Dr. Jernigan does some beautiful work around it. Dr. Jernigan in Kansas, Kansas City? No, Kansas.
Yeah,
Kansas.
He's in Kansas.
Wichita. Yeah. Really, it's really such an important thing, and I know a lot of cancer patients tend to have low body temperature too. You know, and Wim Hof, I've met him. He's like, you've got a breathing issue, and you know, I need to take ice baths. Whoa. I don't think my system, I think it's brilliant, and I think if you are robust enough, I think it's a good idea to do the contrast baths where you do hot, or cold, hot, cold, you know, however you are comfortable. Are you following me, the contrast? You know, you get in the shower
mm-hmm.
and
sure.
just to move the
yeah.
lymph. I think it's brilliant, and I used to do it when I was younger, but I think if you are really weak, it's kind of hard on the body. Do you want to talk about that, Mark?
Yeah, I would never have anyone for chronic illness start with that because I think it is too hard. But it does vasoconstrict,
yeah.
vasodilate, which is good. So you could try,
yeah.
for the Lyme patients that are listening, they could try just cooling it down a little bit. Don't make it cold. Just take it when you're in the shower, take it down to a little bit slightly chilly for you, and then take it back up to warm and probably end on warm. I mean, typically they tell you to end on cold because it closes your pores. But
yeah.
if you end on cold and you're like you or any of the chronically ill people and your teeth start chattering, yes, you're in trouble. So we don't want you to get that way. So end on a warm note. And then obviously the best thing to do would be something like the bone broth. Have something warm prepared on the stove so when you come out of the shower, if you're doing this kind of contrast, you've got something warming from the inside out.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying it a little bit because I've been so cold and it seems counterindicated, but I'm like, wait a second, it actually does warm you up, that contrast, vasodilation, vasoconstriction, right, as you just said. It helps the circulation. So I wait till I'm so toasty warm from the shower, then I can handle it. And I've been trying to end on cool and it's been working. So you guys play with it for sure. But, you know, like the old days when you do a hot tub and then jump into cold. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Probably too hard on a Lyme patient, right?
I would agree. And I've been in Colorado, lived in Colorado, and you get out of the sauna and you jump right into the, we've broken a hole in the ice and you jump into the ice cold water. I don't do that anymore. I just do it in the shower because it was very shocking, but it was okay. But I would tell people to be careful and start slow like you're recommending. And as long as you're getting the internal heat from the foods, see again, the foods you're talking to people about are appropriate for the seasons. They're appropriate for the organs. We're not going to keep you in fear. We're not going to keep stressing your kidneys. That's why I refer people to your program, because somebody has to teach people this kind of stuff that's as important for your immune system and as important for your health as all the supplements you can afford.
I know. And there's a lot of really very expensive, high-end supplements out there that I love, but not everybody can do that. And, you know, I just want to say that the people that can afford the supplements and they're stocking up and they're in fear about everything, they're still in fear. And they're going to be taking supplements and they're in fear. It's like you're producing chemistry every moment. So the supplements can help, but you have to take a lot more if you're going to be in fear. And let's talk about that because, wow, man, fear and the media. And this is reason for concern. Actually, I'm changing my language around. Coronavirus is cause for concern, is how everybody's saying it. I'm saying it's cause for more awareness, right? So it's keeping me out of fear. I'm like, oh, I need to up it a little bit. I need to take more measures. I need to really get people around me to pay more attention. So I think that's important because, my God, fear literally causes a chemistry in your body to the catabolic chemistry that would set you up to get a viral infection. Is that evil?
Of course.
It's like
not evil,
it's like
what it does.
It's just what it does. Oh no, it's just like it's you know, and I don't want to be conspiracy theorist, but I just, you know, the 5G rollout at the same time, and it's like, wait a minute, we're just bombarded. So as much as we can stay out of fear as possible and take appropriate action, that is what I want to talk about. The best way to antidote fear is to take appropriate action, and then I have some other tools that I want to share later on, like how to negotiate when you're overwhelmed with fear, how to work with it. But I want to get back to just finish with the fear and cold, being cold, and kidneys, and how important it is to support your kidneys this time of year. I know we're sort of finishing winter, but, you know, changing weather patterns can be really hard on the body. And, you know, it's like I said, we had 2 days where it was 70, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to live again. And then now it's back to freezing cold, right? So that change is really hard on the body. So finding balance on the days that were warmer outside, eating salads, feeling great. On the cooler days inside, drinking broth. Another problem with winter is we are indoors too much and the lack of vitamin D, right, and lack of sun. And what's interesting, this time of year, as spring is starting to arise, there's the pollen. And so I actually think that's adding to a lot of the fear here in Northern California, because I think people start feeling like sniffly, right? So Mark, can we just quickly touch on like a pollen allergy, feels like a cold, you know, and how it's all immune related anyway?
Yeah, so what I think you just said, implied, was when people get something in their nose or their eyes, they start to think, because of the current fear that's being promulgated by the media, they start thinking, oh, I might have a virus and I might have coronavirus. But if anyone knows that they're more allergic this time of year, they could clearly have an allergic response, and that'll stimulate all the same mechanisms. And so instead of going to fight or flight and fear, oh my God, I have a virus, it's like, oh yeah, I get my seasonal allergies, and I'm adding a piece that I think. The weather has changed in such a way that now things bloom much earlier. We didn't have the cold snaps that we usually have that stopped that. So let's say your allergies don't appear until April. But now the weather, at least in California and other places too, people are now having the snow, the cold, so things are blooming earlier. So people, instead of deciding you have a virus, just think, well, I never had an allergy before April. Well, maybe you have an allergy now because lots of things, because the weather was 70 a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
When it does that, things start to grow. When things start to grow, and they're growing differently, and because they're growing differently, your allergies may be kicking up. It may not be any virus at all. And just think of it from a simple point of view. If you do the program that you're talking about, it'll keep the lymph system flowing. It'll keep you having better bowel movements. It'll make sure that you're hydrated and eliminate your pee more. And guess what? That's the same thing you would do for an allergy. So that's why this program really does give people a lot that I don't want people spending their hard-earned money with me to teach basics. I want to help them when they need fine-tuning. This your program will work on allergies. It won't just work on viruses and bacteria and fungus, mold, and parasite. It will really help them reduce their allergies.
Well, like helping to heal the gut and, you know, and gentle detox, I think, is really, really at the core here for anything, an allergy. You know, it's interesting. When you think about an allergy to a pollen allergy, it feels like a cold. I mean, you get the body aches. It's awful because you're overwhelmed, right? But also, what's interesting, what feels like a cold or flu is when you have, if you've ever done a juice cleanse or a fast of any kind, day four you are full on fever, aching all over, sweating. It's like, so what I'm getting at is a quote unquote virus or cold is a detox reaction. It's your body it doesn't mean it doesn't have a virus, but it's your body pushing the mucus out. So maybe we should talk about that a little bit, because that's why it's so important to keep yourself clean and detoxed at a level that you can handle. Vitamin C is beautiful for that, right? Vitamin C helps to detox. You know, I wouldn't recommend a heavy detox this time of year, but it really is important. Mark, do you want to speak to that a little bit? Because I think we get lost in, like, why am I having these symptoms? Right?
That symptom is the body listening to you and believing you, just like when you got fear because you were cold, if you listen to your body and respond appropriately. So when you stop putting in toxic overload of food or chemicals, and you make sure that all the excretion systems work and your lymph can drain, then your body will believe you because you put it in the right direction, and it will actually move things out as fast as possible. Now, what I will add, because you mentioned this, and I want to just, and people know how I think about these things, but, you know, by the fourth day of a fast, people feel terrible. They do not, if they're doing enemas every single day, and I know everybody thinks that's all I think about, and it's not, because I just want you to eliminate.
What, enemas?
Yeah, enemas. People are always saying, oh, that's all you recommend. It's like, no, let's make sure your bowel movements are working really well. And then if you want to push a detox, and I always tell people, I've got 3 videos on my website for free telling them how to do it and the benefits, but I'm synopsizing that if you're doing a cleanse or you're working with allergies or you're doing any of the things you're doing, if you can make sure that your bowels eliminate really well, you will not have all those symptoms you call a cold or flu. You won't ache all over. And I've told so many people that when they're aching from whatever, either detoxing from being on a cleanse or dealing with anything, I say as soon as you do the enema thoroughly, and that's all on the website for free, you will get rid of almost all your symptoms almost immediately. And I don't want people that are cold to be doing enemas at a cold time during the day. That's what I always recommend. Do it when the weather's warm and you're warm, both weather warm and you're warm. So however you can do that, but let's say you live in a really cold place, then you have to have your external temp, you have to have the heat in your place up, and you have to do it during the daylight. And then all your achiness will go away. And as a short reminder, if you're aching more on the left side of your body, that's the descending colon, the easier part to get rid of. If you're aching more on the right side, that's the ascending colon. A little harder because it has to work and go all the way through to the descending colon. If you're aching all over, clearly you want to get the whole colon as clean as possible. And I would love to hear from people, they can do it through you, that if they were feeling bad and they do a thorough enema, do they feel like their symptoms start to reduce? And do they feel better? And Dani, you've had that experience, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, enemas can be completely life-changing and turn some of the worst symptoms around, without question. I will say that I've been in a situation here where I wasn't able to do an enema, so I took all the things, sort of laxatives. I took magnesium. Yeah. I know you don't like that, Mark, because it can send other minerals out of balance, but
I'm fine with that for short term. I just don't want people
for short term and that
high doses
yeah.
for months, if not years.
Right. So to rely on it, I see. So I upped the magnesium. I took vitamin C to bowel tolerance. Really, really helped, and it just makes such a difference with pain. And I want to go back to, and mention a few things here. Cleaning that out. If the virus is causing tons of waste in your body, and then the waste is what feeds virus, right? The body makes the virus, and the mucus is a breeding ground for more virus, more bacteria. So you have to be doing some kind of cleanse. And if you're getting overwhelmed with a flu, it's really important to eliminate in a big way, because it's life-saving. Actually, you know, Dr. Morse, I heard him say that he had a patient that was maybe pneumonia or something, and they had her in the hospital, and they were thinking it was fine that she had a bowel movement every week, and he had to campaign hard for her, and he said an enema every single day, and after they did that, she totally recovered. We got to get the toxins out. I remember Dr. Klinghart telling me when he was a kid in Germany that his mom, he would get a fever and a virus, and his mom would say, Dietrich, enema, enema right now. And he's like, no. He said he'd rather sit there with 103 fever and do an enema.
Well,
so,
and I had a version of that because my grandparents, they lived about three blocks from where we were on my mother's side, and every time you went in there, they were older, you went into their bathroom, there was an enema bag hanging on the back of the door. And they would ask you, every time you went over to see them, we were young kids, five, six, seven, and they'd say, did you make, that was the Jewish way of saying it, did you make today, did you make a bowel movement? And you learned to say yes, because if you said no, you were put in the bathroom with the enema bag, and you had to do an enema. And so I learned that. You know, I ended up learning it much later for a lot better reasons from Dr. Bernard Jensen. But I had already learned that it was okay because these old people, my grandparents who lived into their late 90s, they made sure they had good bowel movements every day. And if they didn't, they would do an enema. And it never killed them. So it's like, come on. This is easy to do. It's safe. But I'm not telling people to start out doing it. If you're uncomfortable for any reason, go and get a colonic. I'm not trying to promote them. I'm not trying to say spend more money. But if it's your first time, get a colonic so you can experience what it's like, because you may have some bowel cramping and some uncomfortable feelings. And if someone works you through that, you will no longer be afraid if you have that while you're doing an enema.
Yeah, I know. Can you guys hear that? There's a woman vacuuming out there. Can you hear that? Is that too loud?
Can't hear it at all.
Okay, great. So, wow, Mark, I didn't realize you grew up with that. That's intense. That's funny. But I guess what we're just trying to drive home here is that your basic functions of eliminating every day, keeping your blood sugar balanced, hydration, what is the first thing they do when they put you in the hospital? They put you on an IV to get you mineral balance, saline, right? So hydration looks like water with electrolytes, however you want to do that. We talk about adding a little Himalayan salt because there's all the trace minerals in it. There's great electrolyte packets out there now. I don't know how well they're absorbed. Also in this program, I make an electrolyte, a Gatorade, a natural Gatorade that I use dates for the high potassium, celery for the good sodium, lemon for the cleansing properties and all the electrolytes in lemon, and then salt. And you blend it and then strain it, and it's Gatorade. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, and it gives me a buzz. So that's in the program there. I think it should be listed this week. I'm not sure. We'll have to check that. But yeah, definitely look for that because that's really helpful, especially if you've had a fever. It's really helpful to replenish after all the sweating. Gosh, I would love to talk more about fevers, but fevers are important, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
You know, and some people look at them.
A controlled fever. Don't let it get
a controlled fever. Yeah. I mean, you look at Dr. Morse or some of these other old school, they're like, you know, 100 and 203 is fine. That would never fly these days. The first thing that we do is suppress the fever, but just it's like, if you can take it as far as you can to burn all that up, I mean, that's just incredible. Mark, I mean, this is a little tangent, but I know that you know of some clinics in Germany that are using, you want to speak to that?
Hyperthermia. Yeah, well, there's
hyperthermia.
Since I have seriously ill people, including stage 4 cancers, for some of them, I recommend they go to Germany and get either localized or whole body hypothermia, and it really does stop most cancers almost immediately. And since people ask a bunch of questions, they'll tell you that usually the cost for that is like $25,000. So if you've got a stage 4 cancer and you really have no other choice, you know, $25,000 is not a lot to bring it to a stop. And you know, and I have people all the time, I tell them, go to these places. I don't make a referral fee. I can give you 3 or 4 names of places. You call them up. And people are like, oh, I want to stay here and work with my you know, oncologist who's the chairman of the department. And I'm like, well, if you've got a stage 4 lung cancer, you've got a stage 4 anything, you better start thinking about hyperthermia. And it's used for other things, many things. So it does knock things out, and now there's localized hypothermia where you don't have to even be under, because there are these pads that swing out from the arm of the machine, and they can actually do it in a localized area. So if you had a breast cancer or you had bad fibroids and you wanted to take them down. So hypothermia does work,
cool.
and it needs to be controlled.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I'm remembering the time when I was actually in Vancouver and I saw a naturopath up there, and I had a virus that beyond Epstein-Barr and all, I don't even know what it was. It was just a terrible virus that I couldn't get rid of, and a bacteria. And it was like 3 months of just, like coughing and the whole thing. And he put me on garlic, this formula called TIM, T-I-M, by Genestra, mm-hmm. which has all these lymph glandulars, okay, thymus and lymph and vitamin A, and it was this huge immune-boosting supplement. But then he gave me this whole write-up, and I did it, on how to do the hyperthermia at home, where you take a bath and then you wrap in sheets. It's cumbersome, not easy, but keeping yourself at that high temperature for as long as you can. A lot of chronically ill people don't get fevers anymore. So that's why people like saunas.
That's what I was just going to. Saunas work,
yeah.
And you must make sure you're hydrated. So saunas are not just perfectly fine to do unless you're maintaining electrolyte hydration, not just water.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, saunas are so fantastic. I wish I had one, you know, weather on and off. But, yes, saunas is talked about a lot in the community. Saunas, coffee enemas are talked about a lot. We don't talk that much about coffee enemas because we want you to start with water. We don't need to get into that. But, Mark, you've seen people that have been chronically ill try to go right into a coffee enema, and it can – if you got a gallstone, it can be too much. If you are dumping your liver that quickly into a blocked colon, can cause a lot of problems. Do you want to speak to that? I mean, we don't have to get into that too much, but I want to talk about some gentle things. So let's look at some of the answers here. We've talked about building strength, bolstering immunity, the lymph system. Moving lymph this time of year, not easy. It's cold, right? It's mm-hmm. cold. We don't have the same kind of movement.
It takes extra work if you want to do it.
It takes extra work. You're not inspired to do it. What I've discovered since I've been staying at this house is he has a yoga ball. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, wait, I get to just put my feet on the ground and bounce, you know, use my quads to bounce on the ball, and it's helping me. And then I'm like, wow, I can roll over it, stretch out my back. I just did a whole routine on the backyard on the grass. I'm like, this is incredible. And you can do it inside. Now, I would recommend the yoga ball. Maybe I'll put together a routine over a rebounder, and I don't know. I don't know where you are with your structure, but I will tell you that I got one of the best rebounders a few years ago, so excited that it's going to change my life. And I did it, and it destroyed me. I can't even tell you. If your structure is not in a place where it's strong enough, I mean, my atlas went out, my jaw went out, my ribs went out. It's almost too much. So I would suggest a yoga ball that you could sit on. It supports your tailbone. Would you want to speak to that at all, Mark? I think rebounders are great if you're at that level, but if you have structural issues, I'd be very careful.
Oh, I think you've addressed it really well, so I'm going to give my easy one. Just do cross crawl if you can do that. There's always people that can't for whatever reason, but a cross crawl is just, and you can look it up on the internet. There's plenty of indicators. I should probably do a little video of it. But you can do it in your living room. You don't have to do anything serious. You just, if you're opposite arm, opposite leg, you know, moving at the same time, you will start to pump that lymph. And that may be the first thing. And then you do the ball if you can do the ball. And just be careful so that you don't injure yourself. So whatever way you can start to mobilize your structure that doesn't hurt you is really the goal. If you feel like you have to be very careful, then you just, I've had people who are really ill, and instead of doing a cross crawl, they sit in a chair and they toe off on one foot and toe off on the other foot. So you can start that. You know, as a Zumba instructor, I took a Zumba class where we learned how to teach people that really can't even get out of a chair. And they were teaching basically the same things. And there are videos of people that have gotten out of it. They've done just lifting one foot, lifting another, just alternating, and do it with music. And there have been people that have gotten their mobility back. So you start with where you are. Do not feel like you have to do something that will be stressful or harmful to your body.
Absolutely. And I want to say that I'm probably one of the worst structure, scoliosis, tailbone problems, all of it. And I can sit on that yoga ball, like you just said, Mark, instead of a chair. It can't be too big if you're rolling around, but it helps with the tailbone. So, and you can get a little more bounce. And I find that, you know, we could do the conductor exercise that you taught us beautifully. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, stand up and do cross crawl. Really, really just simple resets. So let's just go through this quickly. We only have 20 more minutes. Okay, some of the answers. Lymph, always move your lymph. However you do that, cross crawl, yoga ball, rebounder. Red foods tend to be cleansing to the lymph. There's some great herbs for the lymph. There's lymph formulas. We really like that Physica, right? We talked about that in the last one.
Yeah.
Physica,
yep.
Mark, you want to talk?
Lymph 1, 2, and 3, and lymph code. I have people doing it. If people have limited budgets, if you just put a squirt of each one of those in a water bottle and you just suck out of that a little bit throughout the day, it'll last you a long time, and you'll be basically adding support to clear your lymph, to dissolve, emulsify, break down all that waste that's built up in your body. And that's if you can't move and do a lot of aerobic exercise, that's a way to start moving your lymph without you having to physically move really hard, or especially if it's cold weather. You can't get outside. But you can still do stuff inside, as we've talked about with cross-crawl. There's many things you can do inside that will move your lymph.
So moving lymph, essential. Sweating, we know that. Nutrition, this is a review. Obviously, this zinc is always essential for immunity. Selenium, get your selenium in there, whether it's a supplement or food. People talk about Brazil nuts. I don't know how easily they're digested. Again, I do sunflower butter because I feel really good on it. Sunflower butter is kind of amazing. And kids like it because it has like a peanut butter kind of taste. Vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin C. Okay, so you want to just do a quick – vitamin A obviously is really, really important for viral infections. I mean, I think there was a protocol Klinghart put out with some like really, really high-level dose of vitamin A. If you're hit with it, then you just do – you load up on vitamin A. And that's not beta-carotene like from carrots. This is the actual formed vitamin A.
This is fat-soluble vitamin A. And for a short time, I can have people, the liquid drops are 10,000 IUs per drop. And for some people, I have them do 10 drops a day, you know, for a week or two. And it's not even a problem. There's no problem if you do that much, unless you have a history of taking a lot of vitamin A for years, which I would know in the history. To do that short term, never a problem. And it works in
antiviral.
Yeah, and it works on mucosal membranes. So the coughing, sneezing, blood, all the mucosal membranes do really well with vitamin A.
Okay.
And D, and you mentioned D, and since D is fat soluble also, A and D together do even better.
Right, and vitamin K2 assists with vitamin D3. You know, there's a lot of talk now about D3. Don't take D3 without K2. It's interesting. I splurged and got myself a Mercola D3 K2. And it in the back, the K2, are you ready? What the K2 is from? Fermented garbanzo beans, fermented chickpeas. And it just had my mind going, wait a minute, miso. There's miso, that's fermented chickpea, which would be a brilliant K2. K2 helps get the calcium where it needs to go. So that was a really exciting discovery to think about chickpea miso.
I know,
K2.
And it's inexpensive, and it'll heal your gut. So you get a lot of value out of it.
Okay, guys. So I want to make sure to get to the questions. Just a quick review. Elimination, obviously, is so important. Enemas, excreting toxins, enemas, baths. There's a lot of baths in this program, a mustard bath. I can't remember. There's a couple other baths that we recommend in this one. Obviously, sweating, always replenish, as Mark said. You know, people don't talk enough about nasal health. Is that a word? Nasal health?
You just made it up, but I think it's true.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about respiratory, it's like, okay, of course, we got to protect our lungs, and we went into that deep in the fall sessions. But really, it's like, we've got to be rinsing out our nasal passages. People love neti pots. I can't do a neti pot. It gets stuck in it. I had a blocked ear for a year. It doesn't work for me. And some people don't have the structure that's correct to do a neti pot, but you can definitely moisturize and hydrate your mucosal membrane and your sinuses. And I really like, the Restore mm-hmm. nasal spray.
I love
it. I'll tell you why.
It works so well. People love it.
I love it so much because it gives you relief and it doesn't burn like crazy. Like I've done nasal sprays that kill and mm-hmm. They make you instantly ill, right? It just unleashes holy hell. And when you start killing in the sinuses too quickly. But I love the Restore because it works on the biome, right? It works on the hydrate. You like it too, Mark, obviously.
I love it, and I would tell everybody, if you're worried about colds and flus, I mean, we have it, and it goes out the door as fast as it comes in because Restore, the nasal spray, is for anyone that's had sinus problems, allergies, any of that stuff, if you're just putting a little bit of that up your nose on a regular basis, you'll start to heal. You're not going to just get the symptoms go away. You'll heal the mucosa. That's what you need to do. You know, the Restore for the gut is for healing the tight junctions, but the Restore for the nasal passages is the same thing because you have all those little twists and turns in there. That's anyone mm-hmm. that knows they've had sinus nasal issues, ear issues, that would be a great tool for them to use on a daily basis, and it's not that expensive if you're using it just regularly and clearing your sinuses.
Right, especially people with, you know, the moldies. We all have that mold issue. So
no question. All the mold people should do it all the time.
Really helpful. Yeah, I think I told the story where I did it's a neti pot that has it just shoots up, battery operated, it just shoots up. You don't have to tip your head. And it shoots the water straight up, and then it just comes down by gravity through the other nostril. It just comes out. It's like a mess. I did it the first time, and I basically had a flu for the next 12 hours because, right, Mark, just unleashing all that stuff. So take it slow. Okay, so elimination and protect. Let's just go over quickly how to protect, the obvious. Excuse me, obvious. You know, it's just funny. I've had to tell several grown men to wash their hands lately. It's like, hi, we got to wash our hands now, okay? And they hate me, but I'm like, you know, Andy has an employee that comes here. I'm like, hi, buddy, sorry. Got to wash our hands and do happy birthday and the whole thing. And by the way, I'm going to spray you down. It's what's required. So obviously hand washing is essential. And this hypochlorous acid is magical. Briotech. Now, I feel really proud because I knew about this many months ago. I just didn't talk about it. This hypochlorous acid it smells like bleach, on a low-level bleach, but it kills coronavirus. It kills everything on contact. So there's a cleaner called CleanSmart, I mentioned in the last call, Clean Smart that you can clean your house. Of course, they're sold out on Amazon, but Briotech is one that you can spray on your face. I've heard that you can spray it in your mouth, but I'm not going to say that because it says topical spray. So spray it on your face when you've been outside, spray your children, spray your loved ones. It's really a beautiful thing. I spray the back of my neck. That feels like an energetic space to clear. Obviously, silver is brilliant, and essential oils. Always good to have essential oils when you're out there. I like Raven for the respiratory, Raven from Young Living. You just have that in your pocket. If you feel like you've been exposed, it just kind of detoxifies and opens up the lungs. So I want to get to the questions here. I had so much more to talk about, but I think I'm going to talk about negotiating with fear in the next call, in the huddle call. I think that's what we'll do. Because I just want to say about fear, it comes. And it's just like anger. It just overwhelms your body, and you have to have the tools to negotiate with it. I feel like fear is a crying baby, and you need to acknowledge it and then make some choices. So we actually are doing a love fear inventory this Soulful Sunday, so look for that. And then in the huddles, let's get more into it. We have a couple questions.
I'm looking at them. Which one do you want to deal with first?
I feel like I really, really wanted to settle fear for everybody, but I just I want to leave you again with this, that fear leaves the body. Fear is acidic. It literally is acidic. When you are afraid and you go into that stress state, fight or flight, the catabolic hormones are acidic. An acidic environment breeds bugs. Mark, what did you want to say?
No, I was just going to, you've already really addressed it, and I'm just going to say, the fear is just your body's way of getting your attention, and that's sort of negotiation. It's like, well, when we've all learned to ignore our bodies. We've had to do jobs, to live with our families, and do all the things that we do. So fear is negotiating with you to get your attention to say, would you please do something different than what you're currently doing?
Well, I think we're talking about two different things. I'm talking about the fear on the media.
I'm talking about
the outside fear coming. It's more of the emotional fear. Yeah, when you feel fearful of a symptom, that's a little bit different. But yeah, yes, they both need to be negotiated with, and you have the power to calm yourself down. I mean, I had something happen the other morning at 4:30 in the morning, and the fear response was so intense, and nothing was really happening. I got a phone call at 4:30. I don't need to get into it, but my heart racing, and I felt so ill, and I had to pull myself in, and I want to teach you the things that I do to pull myself in and stay present. It's about staying, not going into the past, not going into the future, about all the possibilities. Okay, so I know this is a lot of talking, guys. I'm sorry. I know. I hope your nervous systems are doing okay. Why don't I have these questions?
I've got them in front of me. Do you want me to?
You want to read the first one, Mark? Let me find it.
Yeah. Basically, hand washing and flu outbreaks. So, yes, basic hygiene. A lot of people are asking for those kinds of things. You can wear a mask if you want to. Just make sure and stay clean with your hands. I would wash up to my elbows. I would, just because that's what I do between patients, and that's how I take care of myself. And obviously, wash your hands before you eat or you put anything in your mouth. I have always told people beforehand, before any of this, since I've had animals around, if I touch an animal, then I have to wash my hands. I have to. I don't know why people don't, you know, whether I'm going to eat or not. So I just figure, you know, the cats and the dogs are running around doing whatever they're doing. Just be conscious. That's all it takes.
I got to say this again. It's not ingrained in our society to wash hands. It's I'm amazed. I mean, I worked at a dentist office when I was 19. I learned, you know, I've been like this for a long time. So, Mark, to hear you say that you wash up to your elbows, that is amazing. I love that. Well, and you know, I'm staying in a home where he has a cat, and he's a pretty conscious guy, and he cleans up the cat's bowls and does all that stuff in the kitchen sink, and I'm just in his hands, and he's like, I've taught him, like, can you wash your hands after dealing with the cat? And he's been doing it. So, yeah, it's like, you know, it doesn't mean you don't live life and love everything. You just take that appropriate action. She's saying, what do you suggest besides hand washing during this flu outbreak? Already wonky immune system. I know. You're not wonky. You're doing great. I think, you know, they're talking about the masks. Okay, let's talk about the masks. The N95 masks for the small particles. I know all about these masks because of the fires. So you want to get those, yeah, the small particle masks, N95, if you're going to do that. I find them really uncomfortable. And what's so interesting is whatever they're made of, I feel like they have, like, what is this that I'm breathing from the mask? Right. But if you are going to be, you know, in a place, in a crowded place or in a hospital, yes, I think a mask is a great idea. There was a study of a hospital where the nurses wore masks, the fine particle ones, and none of them got sick. Where on the other side of the hospital, there were like four cases where the employees didn't wear masks. So I think it can be really helpful. Hand washing, of course, and I promise you this hypochlorous acid spray, Briotech, get it while you can. I know it's going to sell out. I should have talked about it earlier. Sorry, guys. We've known about it. So another question about a mask. Does it really help people? Oh, on an airplane. God, it's so long to wear on an airplane. You know, I've also learned, someone said during the fires that you shouldn't wear the masks more than 15 minutes at a time because it's really hard on your heart. I don't know. I don't know what I want to say there. Mark, do you have any?
I don't think it is, because I've seen many people. No, obviously, if you're morbidly obese and you already have heart problems, that's a whole different thing. So we're talking about, for most people, wearing a mask for a prolonged period of time is not hard on the heart, as long as they get enough oxygen, and they will. Believe me, the mask manufacturers make sure of that, because you think of the lawsuits that would happen if people wore masks.
Well, no, I was wearing one of the respirators with the big, you know, the big ones.
You're talking the big one. Okay.
I was wearing a big one. So, yeah, wear the mask. I would wear really casual clothes, and a hat, a beanie, a scarf. I would make sure you're super warm and covered. I do that anyway. And then I would just make sure as soon as I got to where I was going, I would just drop that at the front, put it in a bag, tie it up, and jump in the shower. And then just don't ever wear those clothes until you can launder them. Are there studies that show virus and bacteria being strengthened or reacting to EMFs? You know, there are. They're just out there. I mean, I would just go to Klinghart because he has the most comprehensive stuff out there about it. Lloyd, there's so many people doing work around it. Suppose I should find some studies. You know, it's funny. I personally don't need any studies. I know what happens. Like, you know, we are the studies. See how you feel when you go to that environment and see if your pain increases or your fatigue increases. People talk about keeping our phones somewhere else in a room away from us. How many feet away would make a difference? I think it depends on your sensitivity. Some people can feel cell phones across the room. I would just... you know, see how you feel about it. I would turn off the data. I still need to do that video where you can turn off the data so you can still text and receive calls, but I've measured it. The emissions drop significantly. So let me make a video on that, how to do that. If there's Wi-Fi in the home, would the EMFs surround us anyway? Even if my Wi-Fi is turned off, I pick up all my neighbors' networks. What can we do about the electric companies that sweep our town trying to replace our meters with the so-called smart meters? If you don't want smart meters. Yeah, she says, apparently I'm feeling feisty. Yeah, you have to fight. I mean, I live in Marin, and we're so lucky, Mark, because Fairfax in particular fought smart meters, and they won. And it's kind of normal around here to actually, I'm sitting right close to a smart meter in this office, and it's awful. But it's quite normal for people to opt out of smart meters. So you just call your it's PG&E here. You call them, and I think it's $75 initially, and then a monthly charge to get it turned back. And I would say I would have a doctor's note if you can. Let's see. She's talking about the Wi-Fi. Even if your own router's turned off, are you picking up the routers from your neighbors? Yeah. Yep, like I've measured it from my neighbor below and on the other side. So, but still, you don't want it to be that close to you. So you can control it better in your own home. Just, it might be a good idea to ask your neighbor if you share a wall where their router is. Mark, do you want to say anything about that?
No, you addressed it perfectly.
Okay. You know, people are asking about traveling. Like with this last one here, we did that flying video. It's funny. Should all Limey stay home? If not, other comments or tips? No, we can't. Here's the thing. It's like we can't stop living. It's like, is Corona going to kill us, or are we going to slip in a bathtub, or is it going to be, who knows? It's like it's one of millions of possibilities. And if we're stuck there, we're missing life right now, and it's really upsetting, you know, again, associating with fear. But you have to be really smart. If I had something super life-generating to go to, I would do it. Sure. I have lots of friends that are traveling that have been sick before. Just do all the things we talk about. Just really amp it up before you go. Maybe that vitamin A protocol, Mark, vitamin D, and then silver spray in the nose, and then the hydrochloric spray on the face. And I always bring, I used to bring Thieves and spray down the seat in front of me and the armrest, but I would do the hypochlorous acid. You spray it and leave it for 60 seconds, and then you can wipe it down.
You know, Dana, I've been giving people just two supplements as baseline, which is Congaplex and calcium lactate. And they're both by Standard Process. And if they're starting to, if you're going to travel on a plane, I tell people take 6 Congaplex before you get on the plane, take 6 when you're on it, and 6 when you land. Take extra calcium lactate. When I have people do that, people that don't even get exposed to anything, they just say, "Oh my God, my energy is better than I thought." And it's like, yeah. You just put in the basic nutrients, because there is some vitamin A in there. There is some vitamin C in there. There's lung support in there. You know, in Congaplex, you get all that in. Just if you don't want to take lots of bottles, it's a pretty simple way to get a lot of things without having to work hard at it.
Chondroplex.
Calcium lactate
is a balance of calcium and magnesium. Is that correct?
Right, and it's going to keep your pH more in range, and it's going to make it, your body will fight things much easier. So those are easy things to do, don't cost a lot of money, and you don't have to have opening 10 or 12 bottles.
Right. Setting your pH up is really, really important. I love that. And having the support along with it. Marietta. Why I have not heard any discussions about different kinds of tests for Lyme and other tick-borne disease. This is imperative. How can someone know for sure that they have or don't have Lyme disease? Why is it so difficult to get a definitive diagnosis? Oh, boy. There's a whole movie about that. There's a whole movie about that. There's
lots
of people.
It's not worth spending the amount of time we'd have to spend on that, because the answer is there's big disagreements among a lot of people, especially regular doctors, about whether people have Lyme or not. And everyone listening to this call knows they have it, and they know that a Western blot is not effective, and they know that there's more strains. In my test files now, I've got 240 strains of Lyme, Ehrlichia, Bartonella, Rickettsia. I've got 240 different strains when I test people. It's not 8 or 9 bands. Forget it. Not even 12 to 15 bands. So I just test for all of them, and then I find out whatever I find. But guess what? The protocol you're putting people on with their diet and all the changes you're doing, that's the baseline they must do. Must.
Here's the thing. Lyme is a bacteria. It's a son of a bitch, but it's a bacteria, and it's like, how do you treat bacteria? Why is the bacteria there? Then we have approached the parasites. Why? How do we approach that? Viruses, same thing. All this is foundational to all the pathogens. It's almost to the point that it doesn't matter. Lyme is a disorder, right? It's like, it's almost just an immune disorder. I mean, I'm not going to say that, but I don't know anybody that just has Lyme disease, not in the chronic stages, right? If you've had Lyme in a chronic way, if you had that pain, you probably have a multitude of things, right? That you're fighting off. So just to answer the question directly, it's very hard to diagnose in a test because Lyme doesn't stay in the blood. It likes to go into the muscle tissue, brain, heart, really lovely. I know Klinghart was doing some kind of test where he would do some deep fascia work, Mark. He would get in there. He'd have someone do some deep Rolfing or...
They would basically stir up your soft tissue and stir up all the lymphatics.
Stir it up and then see if... And I think it was actually a urine test to see if the toxins from the Lyme were there. I can't remember, but yeah. Even that is not really 100%. I've tested positive. I stopped testing because it's just so expensive, and I just know what makes me feel better. And I know virus is a huge, huge piece, even second to Lyme, in my opinion. Even that Dr. Klinghart says, you know, we clean up the mold and the viruses and the heavy metals, and then Lyme is like no big deal. Bye-bye. Right? It's just all the other stuff. All the other stuff is just burdening the system, right? So to get a definitive test, hard to say. I'm sure there's more and more people coming up with tests all the time. Not sure how accurate they are. I would go to a good kinesiologist, muscle tester, someone like Mark, or someone that does ART, Klinghart's muscle testing. Let's see. Just got to wrap this up, guys. Could you advise regarding all the work I've done around CIRS mold illness for 4 years and still have high MMP9? Damn, I'm not caught up with what that is.
It's an immune marker.
Probably a mold toxin. It's just a mold toxin.
It can show you where you're having a problem. So the thing is, I don't look at markers like that. I look at how their symptoms change, because you may have markers long before or after your most of your symptoms are gone. So I'd much rather, I take seriously anything someone says about their body, even if it sounds like a weird symptom. That's their body's response, because everyone's so unique. That's why I don't look at genetic markers. I look at them and I know they're there and I understand the significance, but I don't take them as the only metric for your improvement.
I don't think this is genetic.
The MMP9 is genetic. Sorry.
Okay.
It is genetic. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, sorry. It's so complicated. It's not, you're not stuck with that. She knows that. You're not stuck with your genetics, and she is doing so much work around it. What's intriguing me is this symptom where she says, when I talk and engage with others, my head gets so inflamed feeling. It's so isolating. To me, there's a physiological reason for that, but I also think that she's an empath and feeling a lot of energies, right? She's just having a hard time processing the energy field of another person.
Well, and I would add, even if you're an empath, what I find when someone's saying, when I talk to people and engaging is using your eyes, using your ears, using your mouth. Look at all 12 cranial nerves. I try and get people off of this looking at only the vagus nerve. Look at hypoglossal. Look at glossopharyngeal. Look at the facial ones. Because if somebody says, I have a woman that literally when she's by herself, she feels really good in her head, and when I check her pulses, they're fine, and then when she runs a store. And when she's in the store talking to people, her cranial nerves go crazy. And so I've learned, because she's a short person, this is just an example, when she has to talk to people because she owns the store, she has to look up at almost every single person. So her neck is at a weird angle. We figured out that a lot of her stuff comes from, because when you're like under 5 feet and you're talking to people in a business, your angle of your neck is terrible. So we're working on getting her neck realigned because she had a neck injury. And guess what? Most of those symptoms are gone. Now, I'm not saying this woman that has the same problem, but I'd have someone, I mean, we can do it with muscle testing. I check people all the time. Check your cranial nerves. If you have two or three off, you're probably going to have the vagus off also. Get that reset, figure out the way that you can reset it or someone can, and then see if you can maintain that.
That's really interesting. I didn't look at it like, I see now that it says talk. I thought it said engage with other people, but the talking part, right.
Glossopharyngeal and hypoglossal, yes.
Mm-hmm. Needing to speak. There's just so much that goes into that. Oh, wow.
Right.
And
we're not even talking about jaw alignment, so I would have them protrude,
yeah.
Retrude, lateralize right and left. And if you see, you can do that in front of a mirror. And if you see an asymmetry, someone has to reset your jaw.
Yeah. I'm sure, Sherry, you've got to know about this, like a neurological chiropractor. Send an email, or Mark, maybe you would talk to them.
Yeah, and I can even tell you, I could evaluate that. I can't use the word diagnose, but if we did a FaceTime and I just had you do the basic things, protrude, retrude, lateral right, lateral left, slowly open, slowly close, all that, if there's a problem there, I can tell you, and then I can say, okay, here's the kind of person that can address that problem. So I may be, maybe you're far away, but I can at least help you evaluate you have a real thing going on.
Right. I mean, we just cannot say enough about the importance of structure, aligned structure. I mean, it's. I put out a GoFundMe to get help for my own care because I haven't had structural help in so long. Like I just, it's a big deal, Mark. It's you know that. That's what you do. And it's like, if the structure's off, everything falls apart. And I remember talking to Seth Lynn, my osteopath, said that there's some study, and I wish I had it now, but when there was a tuberculosis outbreak, the people that went to an osteopath survived because they were getting alignment and drainage. Right, so it's all about the drainage. We're not draining,
mm-hmm.
and we're not firing correctly. And misfiring nerves. Let's see. Sorry, I'm trying to read all this. Is there anything else you want to say there, Mark?
No, but I really want to emphasize that drainage is really dependent on all the cranial nerves, how your bite is. So if people are saying I have things in my head, you know, whatever they want to call it, allergies, whatever. Get someone to please check that. It's in 5 minutes they can check all your cranial nerves, they can check your bite, and if someone's there that actually can palpate it, they can palpate your cranium and they can find out anything that's off. That is a valuable tool to help you figure out what to do. It really can change your life. That's sort of the anima for your head, is if you don't have all those nerves functioning right and lymphatics draining, you're having waste build up, and that will give you all kinds of symptoms.
Right. Wow. What's it called? The glymphatic system?
Glymphatic,
also?
Yes.
Yeah.
They only figured this out in 2014. They only figured out, I don't know anyone that's had sinus pressure. I had it most of my life. You know, colds, flus, allergies. It didn't say, gee, I have a lot of snot coming out of my nose. I'm coughing stuff up. I wonder if that's mucus. I wonder if that's lymph. I mean, they finally figured it out in 2014. You have lymphatics in your brain? Really? I think everyone that's had that experience knows it. Now they can say, yes, you're right. Oh, we did discover them.
Oh, boy. Lots to learn. Okay, it's 2:08. Let's just wrap this up here. Joanna, where can I get written documentation of Wi-Fi being detrimental to healing from Lyme and Epstein-Barr? Interesting that comes up again.
How about Klingheart?
Back to Klingheart. Mercola is really thorough, and
Hello?
Hey, I don't know if she might have dropped off
again.
We
lost her? Oh, my God. Oh. She'll come back.
Huh?
So,
oh, there she is.
Hello?
Yep.
You're back.
Fell off for a second.
Oh, wow. So weird. Did you catch that I said the Mercola interview with Klinghart?
Yep.
Okay, good. I think that's the best one because they cite a lot of studies and two powerhouses there and really well-researched. She's also asking about the best air purifier. I think we talked about this in the last call.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many out there. I like the Austin Air the best. I've only tried a few, but I love the Austin Air HealthMate Junior. People love the molecule. It's very expensive. I don't love it, but some people do. And then
I've done very well with Air Oasis, and they make a nice portable one that when I travel, I just put it in my hotel room. And I swear, you come back after being out for 3 or 4 hours, and the room smells totally different. So I love the Air Oasis.
We used to have that on our site because it's one of my favorites, too. Exactly, Mark. I remember being in a hotel that smelled like paint, and I put it in there, and I left, and it was gone. It's amazing for so small. But they don't make the little one anymore. I don't know They stopped making. Well, maybe they stopped making that one. I don't know if they've come out with a new one. I'll gotta look that up.
I still have a couple of them, and I travel with them all the time.
Oh my gosh! Well, hold on to it. They're great, so great. And she's asking, what else do you do to deal with environmental toxins if you're on a very low income? I think we talked about this before, but, you know, when you're in saturation from environmental toxins, you need dilution is the solution to pollution. So you need fresh air. You need to make space in your own body by eliminating. You need to hydrate. If your home is toxic, obviously get out, get in your car, pull up to a park. Go to the woods. You don't have to get out. You don't even just roll down the windows, get some fresh air. If you can stand and walk a little bit, that's even better. I know it's hard with the very low income, but I would invest in an air purifier without question. Just do it. Sometimes they offer payment plans. So that's always good. Okay, guys. Wow. That's a long time for you guys to be on. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Brent and Mark, for taking your Saturday. And thank you, everyone, for being with us. Sorry it was a long one. We'll get more into the negotiating fear in the Huddles call.
Mm-hmm.
And why love is the antidote.
And you know what?
Okay, wonderful.
I just thought of this. If there's one or two people that have serious head congestion, I'd like to I'll donate 5 minutes of my time to do an FaceTime look just to see if there's any congestion, if there's anything off in your head. And if there is, I'll tell you who to see appropriately. So send information to Dana. I'd like to just see if someone that's had some kind of head congestion or neck congestion, if we find that there is a structural anomaly, let's get you to the right person and see how quickly that clears up. I'd love that as an experiment.
Interesting. Okay. Excellent. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Have a great day. We have two more calls. We have Soulful Sundays. We have more interviews. We have lots of fun. Get in there. Get in that Facebook. Okay. Talk to you soon.
Awesome. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.